When nothing happened for some time, Pox quit thinking so much about an arrow in the head and instead enjoyed the ride. A thin haze covered the sun, thickening to a gray ceiling as they rode. Ambrose frowned at the sky.
If that keeps up, we'd better turn back.
Why?
From that direction it means rain, or even an early snow.
He sighed.
I might have known that Gerd himself would shorten my leash, with a marshal gone.
Pox stared at him. He looked both unhappy and slightly worried. Ambrose, what is it?
I'll tell you, Pox, but please don't tell everyone. I'd hope to go as far as my father's farm. It's been over a year now, and it less than a day's ride away, and I wonder if I'll ever see them again.
But if it's that close, why haven't you?
Because the marshal hasn't allowed it, said Ambrose shortly, reining his bay around to the west. It's been one thing after another, chores, drills, whatever. My father's been into Brewersbridge, of course, to the markets. My mother came once, last spring. But it'll be spring before either of them come again. I just wanted to see them one more time before winter.
He sighed again.
It was a foolish idea.
But why? I mean, just because it's going to rain, I don't melt in the rain, Ambrose, not even in snow. How far is it?
He shook his head. No. Pox, you're not a Gerdsman. I can't explain. But I tried to go on my own, and it's not what I should do. With Marshal Sedfer gone, the Grange is my responsibility. The clouds are another warning. The first was in my own heart. We'll go back. I pray Gerd that no more will be required.
Puzzled, and a little put out, Pox followed Ambrose back toward Brewersbridge. The clouds thickened, and soon a fine drizzle wet her face. It was not enough to penetrate her cloak. She nudged the black horse and rode up beside Ambrose. Ambrose, do you really think Gerd made it rain because you wanted to see your family? She thought even less of Gerd if that was his sort of action.
No, not exactly.
Ambrose spoke slowly, as if more lay behind his words than he wanted to say.
I don't know, to be honest, where the clouds came from. The High Lord may grant the winds keys to any he wishes, I dare say, but Marshal Sedfer did say the Grange was my responsibility. Even if you find the brigands, he said, I cannot fight them with you.
But did he tell you not to visit your family? Pox persisted.
No. I think he knew I would want to go, but did not insult me by telling me my duty.
Ambrose gave a short laugh.
He should have.
But you...
Pox,
said Ambrose, with a look that stopped the words in her mouth.
Pox, you have been a soldier in many battles. Have you ever had a dream of death?
She stared at him, surprised into long silence.
Not
exactly, she said finally. Some of my friends have. I have had disturbing dreams, though, if that's what you mean.
Did you ever know someone to have a true dream like that?
Once. Pox swallowed with difficulty. She wondered what dream had come to Ambrose. When she glanced at him, he was staring at his horse's mane, fists clenched on the reins.
I saw myself, he said softly. She could barely hear him. I saw myself fighting, and struck, and dying, and then nothing.
I know,
he said, turning to meet her eyes. I know that all Gerdsmen train for this, to fight evil to the death, but Pox, it was so soon. You know this cut.
He pushed back his sleeve to show a cut she had dealt him in practice the night before.
It wasn't healed yet. I could see it, under the other marks.
Pox shivered violently. Ambrose's face seemed to waver, changing from the ruddy living countenance before her to the pale fixed expression she had seen on so many dead.
It was a dream, she managed to say, and not all dreams are true.
I know. He nodded, seeming more at ease.
I know that, but I thought I'd like to see my father and mother again.
He looked sideways at her.
Do you think less of me for that?
No, of course not. But she felt older than a boy who had seen his parents within the past half year, who had been home a year ago.
I wondered, you being a soldier and all, you've seen more fighting than I have. To be honest, I've never faced an actual enemy.
Pox did not know what to say. She did not feel like boasting of her experience. She thought, as she often did these days,
of her own home, and wondered for the first time if she would see her own family again. But she had had no troubling dreams and had no fears. She smiled at Ambrose, hoping to reassure him. "You fight well, Ambrose, in practice. I expect you'll fight well when need comes. I hope it is not as soon as you fear. Will you tell the Marshal of this dream?"
"I would have, if he had not left already.
Yes, he must know in case it is an evil sending. I thank you, Pox, for not laughing at me." They were back at the inn in time for a late lunch. Pox persuaded Ambrose to eat with her. She had decided to show him the scrolls from the Elfane Tag. If she had not laughed at his bad dreams, perhaps he would not laugh at her slow reading. But they ate slowly, and it was near mid-afternoon when she started upstairs to get the scrolls. She had them in her hand, when a disturbance in the street below brought her to the window. A yelling crowd surrounded a blood-stained man bareback on a fat mule. As Pox watched, Ambrose erupted from the inn door, followed by Hebbenford. The crowd spotted him, ran to him.
"Robbers!" she heard. "Robbers! The caravan!"
The man on the mule slid off sideways. Two men caught him, half carried him toward the inn. Pox saw Sevry's red head move through the crowd and take the mule by the bridle. She waited to see no more, but turned away and ran quickly downstairs. Hebbenford and Ambrose bent over the man, who half lay in a chair near the fireplace, his clothes torn and bloody. Pox saw the black-clad man leaning quietly against the wall behind several others, who were chattering loudly. He caught her eye and smiled. Pox felt herself blushing. Ambrose glanced up and saw her.
"Pox, good, come here, will you?"
Pox moved through the group, aware of curious glances. She had seen from above that Ambrose commanded more of their respect than she'd thought, at least when the Marshal was away. "What is it?" she asked.
"His man says he was a teamster on the caravan that left this morning. They were attacked by brigands on the west road, and all the guards were killed."
Pox looked at the man, a stocky, darkly tanned man of medium height, and wondered just where on the west road. Ambrose was asking more questions. She could not hear the soft answers. Hebbenford began clearing the others out of the room. Over his shoulder he said,
"I'll tell the mayor."
Pox wondered who would be sent to Sir Felis. With the room empty and quiet, Pox could hear the man's replies to Ambrose's questions. "Hundreds of bandits," he said shakily. "Hundreds and hundreds, with horses and bows and swords. They took the whole caravan, every animal and wagon, and killed all the guards, and—"
"How did you escape?" asked Ambrose. "Isn't that one of the caravan mules?"
Pox would not have thought the dark face could darken, but it did.
"I was the last wagon, sir. I heard a noise. That stretch of road has an evil name, you know. And so I cut the lead offside mule free and—"
"Ran for it," finished Ambrose, with the same tone Pox thought the Marshal would have used.
"Well, I tried."
Pox watched the man's face as he took a long, difficult breath.
"But that Simeot's damned son of a Parganese jackass bucked me off, that he did, and ran away after dumping me flat in the midst of it all. So I lay there too stunned to run or fight, and I reckon that was best in the end. One of 'em poked me a little, but I made shift to lie still and be quiet. I heard 'em talking, telling each other to be sure all the guards were dead. Then they tried to catch my mule, but they couldn't lay a finger on him, so they went off. I waited a bit, and I was some sore too, sir. And then, when I did sit up, there was that damned mule, not a length away, hee-hawing at the blood smell. Then he came to me, and thank the luck for that. I counted all the guards' bodies, sir, and so I know."
"What about the merchants? And the other teamsters?"
"The teamsters are all dead. Gnome and man alike. I didn't see the merchants' bodies, but I doubt they live."
"Hmm." Ambrose sounded again very like the Marshal. "Where was this? It seems to me you're back soon and luckily with such a tale."
The man paled a little.
"Sir, please. I swear it's the truth. We left early this dawn, the landlord can tell you. And the road was dry. We made good time. Old Kobai, that's the master, he didn't want to stop for nooning in that stretch of woods, so we pressed on, eating on the seat as we drove. I had just finished my pickle when I heard the noise. Coming back, sir,
I fair beat that mule to a lather.
Ambrose gave Pox a quick look. She could not tell his meaning, but something made her speak up. How badly are you hurt? Can you tell? The man looked at her gratefully.
They poked me some, lady, and I fell hard before that. I wrapped my own shirt on it. This is off a guard.
He indicated his blood-stained shirt. Well, you'd best let us see. Yeoman Marshal, is there a surgeon in town? She hoped she was right to use his title.
Yes, said Ambrose. At the keep with Sir Fellis.
He looked aside.
We'll need clean cloths and water. It's too bad the Marshal is gone.
That's what they counted on, no doubt, said the driver.
Pox, meanwhile, had unwrapped the rag he had bound to his head. Underneath was an ugly gash. She thought it looked bone deep. It's no wonder they thought you dead with that head wound, she commented. What's your name?
Jerris, lady. Jerris Angarn of Dapplevale in Leonia. Do you know it?
No. Be steady now. Pox helped Ambrose uncover the man's other injuries, mostly bruises but for two shallow gashes in side and back. You're lucky, Jerris. They could easily have killed you.
I know it.
He shifted uneasily as they began to clean the wounds.
Ouch! Sorry. If that mule hadn't bucked, they might have got me, sure. They had horses. I don't deserve it, that's the truth, but that's luck. It comes as Simiots pleases.
You think Simiots has more power than the High Lord? Asked Ambrose. Is that what you learned in Leonia?
Oh, sir. In Leonia I was a boy, and had a boy's faith. But I've been on the roads near 20 years now, and I've seen good luck and bad come to all. As for the High Lord, he made the whole world, so I hear, if it wasn't Sir Tig instead. But what does he have to do with a mule driver? The good men, you might say, died today. They that was brave and tried to fight. And here I am, alive a bit longer, and able to give you word, because a mule bucked me off on my hard head. Does the High Lord extend his power to make a mule buck?
Pox stifled a laugh. She had heard of Simiots only as the thieves' god and the gambler's patron, but the muleteer seemed honest, if not brave. Ambrose, however, was sober and crouched down to meet the man's eyes.
If the High Lord wanted your mule to buck, Jerris, be sure he could do it. But there is one more near us than that. Gerd Strongarm, a man once like you. He had a hard head himself, and it said he knows how to convince another. I would not call it luck alone if I found myself alive when my companions were all dead, and a mule nearby to ride on despite the blood smell. Does your mule love you so, to buck you off, escape capture, and then return for you?
Jerris's face furrowed as he tried to think.
Well, now, I see what you mean. To be honest, I wouldn't have thought that donkey spawn would stay near new dead like that. But why would Gerd, if he wanted me alive, dump me on my head first? Why not save the whole caravan and set fire to the brigands?
Why is there winter? Why does water flow downhill only?
Ambrose sounded even more like a marshal.
The High Lord lets men deal with men, as often as not. As for you, perhaps Gerd knew your mule could not outrun their horses, or perhaps he was seeking an entrance into your hard head and tried knocking first.
Peace, Ambrose, said Sir Fellis from the doorway. You can convert the man later, but for now I'd like to know what happened. Behind him, a surgeon carried a cloth bag of gear. Master Xynthis, in still another robe, followed him and smiled at Pox. When the man had told his tale again, and the surgeon had settled him in one of the inn's rooms, Sir Fellis, Xynthis, Ambrose, and Pox conferred in a small room opening off the kitchen.
Hundreds of brigands I simply do not believe, said Sir Fellis. They haven't stolen enough food and forage for anything like that number. In this case, they killed 20 and captured several, we aren't sure how many, but out of ambush, that wouldn't take more than a score of well-armed, disciplined troops, perhaps fewer. Certainly I don't think they can have more than...
He paused, looked up at the lamp, and thought a moment.
30, I'd say, and fewer horses than that. Most of the caravans they've hit have been carrying dry goods, weapons, that sort of thing, not food. Yes. But now what? Asked Ambrose. You know Marshal Sedfer said I couldn't go, but what do we do now? Sir Felis looked at Pox. It's your choice, since you accepted the task, but if you want advice...
Yes, sir.
Then I would say, let me take a troop out there, as everyone expects, and pick up the bodies. Contrive some reason for riding that way yourself tomorrow, not just riding, something else. And see if you can find a trace of the wagon's movement. I won't even look. It'll be dark by the time I get out there with my men. If you find it, don't be in too much hurry to follow it up. They'll be watching the road pretty closely for a day or so, I expect. Give them time to relax. Then, if it's where we think, go after them. Pox shook her head.
By your leave, sir, I have another thought. An assault on a keep, even a ruined keep, is no easy matter. We tried that once in Arrhenius. Why not try to frighten them out? Catch them at their bolt hole.
The game trail you're thinking of?
Yes, but close by the keep. If a show of frontal assault...
With what? Asked Sir Felis. I can't give you a troop.
No, but Master Xynthis might have some magical means. She glanced at him. Messenian, the part elf I was traveling with, had some illusions. I thought perhaps...
Xynthis looked pleased, though Ambrose frowned. In fact, Lady Poxenarian, illusions are a specialty of mine, far less dangerous to the onlooker than, say, real firebolts. And easier to do, muttered Ambrose softly. Xynthis glared at him.
Young sir, if you think it is easy to produce even illusory fire, I suggest you try. My old master, who was well known in the arts, always said that a fine, convincing illusion was far more difficult, because reality carries its own conviction, and saves its own appearances. If you make a flame, it is a real flame, and you don't have to worry once you've got it. But an illusory flame can go wrong in many subtle ways, even such a thing as forgetting which way the wind is blowing, so that it flickers the wrong direction.
Sorry, said Ambrose, staring at the table. Pox thought he didn't sound sorry at all. She smiled at Xynthis.
I don't know anything about it, she said, but could you make something to scare them out? Something to make them think a large force was coming at them?
I might do, said Xynthis, still obviously ruffled.
He twitched his shoulders and glanced at Sir Felis.
It would be easier if I had a small matrix to work on as a pattern.
A what?
A form, a framework, or in plain terms, if I had a few real men-at-arms that I could simply multiply in illusion, rather than creating the whole thing out of my head, it's easier to keep them in step, you see.
Pox didn't see, but nodded anyway. Sir Felis made a steeple of his hands.
How many, Xynthis?
The mage looked at him, considering.
Oh, a half dozen, say?
Four. Sir Felis set down his mug.
Four is plenty to save your hide if it doesn't work, and I can't waste the time of more.
Four, repeated Xynthis cheerfully. You'll see, Lady Poxenarian, I'll do you an illusion that'll have them running out the back door for cover. By the way, how do you know there is a back door?
Never saw a keep without one, said Pox cheerfully, thinking of Siniava's many tricks.
Gods grant we choose the right place.
That, said Xynthis with satisfaction, is up to you soldiers. Just tell me when and where you want them frightened. I'll take care of that.
Chapter 14 Maul, when Ambrose explained the plan, seemed shrewder than Pox had expected. He spoke quietly enough, with a rumbling chuckle when amused. Pox began to think he might be an asset after all.
So, we're to find the place first, and find Sign. Then she'll lead a troop?
He gave Pox a sharp look. Have you led troops before, lady? I don't mean to be like Dorian, but...
I was acting corporal in one of the cohorts, said Pox.
That means yes, I take it.
He turned back to Ambrose.
And what if their place is fortified? Do we try to take it?
No.
There's a plan to get them out, if it's the place we think it might be, or one like it. Have you been out near the old Sarian ruins lately?
Gerd, no. I told the marshal a few years ago that was a bad place, unlucky, that is.
Is that where you think they are?
It could well be, considering the sign Pox saw a few days ago.
And they're a brave bunch, that's all I can say. I wouldn't stay there for a silver a day, not even for a cask of ale. And for you, that's saying a lot. All right, Mull. I know you don't like it, but if they're wicked enough, it might not bother them.
What is it? Asked Pox. Why are the ruins so bad?
Mull and Ambrose looked at each other. Ambrose broke the silence. It's from before my time. I was just a boy living over near the Leonian border, but there was a wizard who settled in there. Built a stronghold all in 1 year by magic, some said. Like most wizards, didn't care more for bad and good than a deaf man cares for music.
I don't know as that's fair, Mull broke in. Master Xynthus is a nice enough fellow.
Who buys you ale every quarter day. But would you trust him, Mull, at your back in a fight?
Mull considered.
Well, yes, if Sir Fellus or the Marshal were there at least. I like him myself, said Ambrose. I think he's as honest as any wizard, but they care more for magic and money than anything else. It's their nature. But this other wizard, Sarian, wasn't much like Xynthus. No, he came here, so I was told, because he wanted to rule. That's not what he said. He said he had come to study. But he had a small horde of magical creatures that he let loose, and then he threatened worse if people didn't pay taxes for protection from them. Brewer's Bridge had no keep then, just the Grange.
It wasn't Marshal Sedfer here then, Mull put in, grinning at Pox.
Nor yet Diorcia, but the one before her, I don't recall his name.
It doesn't matter, said Ambrose shortly. He made the mistake of believing the wizard harmless when he came, and it ended with a lot of lives lost when the yeoman had to storm the place. He blew himself up, at the end, rather than be taken.
I hope he blew himself up, said Mull darkly. The way that place feels, I'm not so sure.
He may have left spells, said Ambrose. Pox found herself hoping that the brigands were hiding somewhere else. She did not want to meet a wizard who had only pretended to blow himself up, but she had to agree that Sarian's old keep was the closest of the known ruins to the blaze she'd found, and Mull agreed to go out with her the next day to take a look at the trail sign. Mull arrived at the inn, driving a sturdy two-wheeled cart with a large, shaggy pony between the shafts. His big axe stood head down in the corner beside him. Two more wheels filled the bed of the cart.
This way, he said quietly, downing the tankard of ale which Hebbenford brought him without being told. This way I'm just hunting a good straight bowl of limber pine for the town hall extension. With these extra wheels, I can haul anything we find.
Pox wondered how. She had never seen foresters at work. Mull saw her confusion and laughed loudly. Pox noticed others watching and listening.
See, lady, you don't know everything yet.
Now his voice was louder and more accented.
What I do is cut a short, heavy piece for the axle to bind these wheels together and then tie them near the end of the bowl, with the front end resting in the cart and the other held by the wheels. Now do you see?
Pox nodded. She started to ask why the second set of wheels didn't fall out from under the tree trunk, and then realized that he could tie it securely to the wood that held the wheels together.
Ride along with me, said Mull, as if she had planned something else, and I'll show you some more things you don't know about.
I should find Ambrose, she said doubtfully, as they had arranged.
Mull laughed again. Oh, Ambrose, by Gerd! You don't want to spend every day with him, do you? He's a yeoman marshal, after all. Come on, now.
He gave her an enormous wink and swaggered back to his cart after handing one of the serving wenches his tankard. Someone laughed. Pox grinned.
You go on ahead. I'll catch up when I've got my horse ready. Which way are you going?
Oh, west again. I remember a few years ago out that way there was a straight, tall, limbless bole right near the road. Not so hard, you see, if the trees I want are next to the road.
Good, said Pox. That way I can tell Ambrose I won't be riding with him this morning. Mull waved and went on, and she ducked into the stable to saddle the black horse. She hoped their act had gone off well. She hated to think of a spy in the village, but the evidence for such was persuasive. She caught up with Mull before he was well into the forest on the far side of Brewer's Bridge. He had stopped to chat with the woman at the last roadside farm. He waved her to a stop.
Pox, do you know Eris here?
It was the same woman Pox had met in council. Pox began to think Mull was even smarter than she'd thought.
Yes, I remember you, said Pox, swinging down from the saddle.
She was no longer afraid to mount and dismount in front of witnesses. The black was learning manners. I didn't know this was your farm.
It wasn't a few years ago, said Eris with a slow smile. We used to be out there.
She pointed southwest.
But raiders, bandits, something kept breaking our fences and running off stock. Finally, after my husband died, and the boys married, I bought this farm from a cousin, just to be closer to town.
It looks good, said Pox. The small farmhouse looked in good repair, and the orchard next to it was obviously flourishing.
Oh, it's a good farm, said Eris. I miss the spring we had before. The best water I ever had, and only a few steps from the door. But when you find dead animals in it, day after day.
Ugh!
Pox shuddered.
Do you like apples? She went on. The good ones are coming ripe now. I'd be glad for you to have some.
Between me and the horses, said Pox, we'd eat half your orchard full. I'll buy a measure of good ones for me and a double measure of bruised ones for the horses.
I would have given...
Eris, said Pox, wondering as she said it whether she should have given her the council title. I grew up on a farm myself. Right now I have the money, and you have apples to sell.
Very well, said Eris. When you come back by this evening, or whenever, I'll have them near the gate, under the hedge.
And you know I want some, Eris, said Moll.
You.
I thought you lived on ale, Moll.
But she was laughing as she said it. They continued down the road, chatting freely. Pox continued to lead the black horse since Maul was walking beside the cart. He pointed out different trees, but Pox quickly grew confused with it. Colors and patterns of bark and shapes of leaves and the form of the tree meant little to her. She could tell a star-shaped leaf from a lance-shaped one, and both those from the ferny-looking compounds, but that was her limit. Maul teased her gently. In the meantime, they both watched the road for the signs of the caravan, the fresh wheel ruts and narrow mule hoof marks. These they did not mention. Pox wondered what would be left at the ambush site, since Sir Felis had sent a troop of his soldiers out to retrieve the bodies. Would she even notice it? As the sun neared its height, she began to worry that they'd missed it. But it was clear when they came to it. Deeper tracks, round-hoofed, of ridden horses, and the mule's tracks veering from side to side. Bloodstains on the fallen leaves, and on the rocks that edged the road. A few spent arrows, mostly broken. Maul pointed out the traces she missed, chatting the while about trees. In the end, Pox found the way the wagons had been taken. Freshly cut boughs, the leaves hardly withered, disguised the wagon's track into the woods. The brigands had chosen a stony outcrop for the turn off the road. It led, or so Pox thought, the wrong direction, north. But Maul looked grim when he saw it.
There's a farm to the northwest, he said, or was, until it burned. If they're using it, they may be using the old farm lane to bring the wagons back and cross this road farther along. As I remember, that other farm lane hits this road in about the same place.
Well, do we follow this? Asked Pox.
No, not with horses. We'd make a noise like an army in there with a third of the leaves down as they are. If you'll take my advice, we'll go along the road and look for that other place where the lane comes in.
Pox could just see the lane coming in ahead when Maul stopped abruptly.
Ha! He said loudly. There's the tree I come for.
She stared at him, surprised, and he winked.
You'd best go up the road a ways, he went on. I want to drop it right here in the road. Tell you what, you take these two wheels along with you, eh? Go on, yes, right along up there, at least as far as that lane. This'll fall long, I tell you.
Pox finally caught on, and wandered slowly up the road as he bade her. Behind her, the axe rang on the tree. She wondered if it really was a limber pine or whatever. It was hard to roll the wheels along with one hand and lead the black horse with the other. Several times a wheel got loose, and she had to bend to pick it back up. When she got both wheels as far as the lane crossing, she dropped them with a grunt and wiped her hands on the fallen leaves. The black horse nudged her, and she scratched his chin idly. She could just see Maul bending to his work.
How long will you be?
She called back to him. The rhythmic axe blows stopped, and he stood up.
Eh?
How long will you be? She made it loud and distinct. I thought I'd ride on and find water for my horse.
Oh, say, a finger or two of sun, not longer. There's a spring up that lane. Used to be a farm there some years back. You could bring me some. My can's back here. This fellow won't fall till I drop him.
Pox mounted and rode back, to another of Moll's winks, and he handed her a tall can with a wire bale.
It's good water, or used to be, he said. Look out for wild animals, though. I've heard of wolves using it.
I'll be careful, said Pox, and drew along the black horse's neck the tracks she'd seen, wagons and teams both. Moll nodded and waved her away. Pox made no attempt at silence as she rode along the lane that led south. She found a thread of water beside the lane, and then a cobble-walled springhouse. Beyond was a half-overgrown clearing with the ruins of a farmhouse and outbuildings. She didn't look at it, but dipped the can in the spring and let the black horse drink afterwards. It was not really thirsty, and wanted to sniff at fresh droppings a few feet away. Pox reined it around slowly and rode back, glad of her helmet and mail shirt. Moll had the tree down by the time she got back, and loudly directed her in placing the wheels under one end of it. He had trimmed the ends of the axle log into rough rounds, and once the wheels were in place, split the ends and placed cross wedges in them. Thing is, he said, the wheels have to turn on the axle, not with it, else it'd walk right off the end of the tree. Pox hadn't thought of that problem, nor had she noticed the can of grease he'd brought to put on the axle. She did wonder how he'd gotten the large end of the tree into the cart. Surely he wasn't that strong. She glanced overhead for something he might have slung a line from.
Don't look up, he warned quietly.
Pox froze.
If you want to know how I lifted that monster, he said more loudly, I used its own limbs for levers. Trimmed 'em after. That's how I do it. Some men use lines, but then they have to have a taller tree nearby. Not always handy. By gird, I'm thirsty.
He drained the can at one swallow. The journey back was slower. Moll's pony moved the tree at an easy footpace. The black horse fretted. Pox got off again and walked alongside. When they reached Eris's, they picked up the apples. Moll told Pox what the current price was, and she left it wrapped in the cloth Eris had put over the baskets. From there into town, they talked softly of what Pox had seen. Moll said he had spotted a watcher in the trees. They agreed it would be too dangerous to scout the game trail if the brigands were still so alert. It was nearly dark when they passed the Grange. Ambrose and several other yeomen were talking in the Barton gateway and called greetings.
You can come help me on the bridge, Moll yelled back. Pox here isn't much of a teamster.
That's not a team, Pox retorted, sure by now that such joking was acceptable.
I'd be glad to hitch your black up and let him do some work, said Moll. I doubt that.
Ambrose came up to them.
You weren't there the first time she saddled him. He'd be impossible in harness. Come on, Jory, give us a hand here.
Ambrose and the other yeoman helped Moll get the wheels aligned on the bridge. Still talking, they followed along. Moll untied the log beside the council hall and drove it off the back wheels. Then he let the weight drag it out of the cart. His pony gave a heavy sigh as the log fell, and the men laughed.
Come on to the inn, said Moll. I'll buy a mug for you.
They nodded and walked along. Jory and Ambrose returned to some Grange matter. Pox did not know what Grange set was, or what it had to do with a farm sale. She hardly listened, intent instead on figuring out just what Moll Arganist really was. Not a simple forester, that was clear. She was beginning to wonder if anyone was actually a simple anything. Until Brewer's Bridge, she had not considered that an innkeeper might be a council member as well, that many people had more than one role, and considered them all important. The common room was moderately busy, but quiet. News of the attack made solemn faces. Pox stabled the black horse and went back in to find that the others expected her at their table. She shook her head at Moll's offer of ale and asked Heppenford for supper instead.
I eat before I drink, she said in answer to Moll's question. I don't have your...
She paused and looked at him with narrowed eyes as the others laughed.
Capacity,
she said finally. Moll shook the table with his laughter.
You didn't start young enough, he said. When I was scarce knee-high, my old dad had me down tankards at a time.
Of ale?
Asked Ambrose.
No, ale costs too much, water, but it's the habit, Ambrose, of an open throat. the feel of it sliding down. Then why didn't you stick with water? Oh, that was my brother.
His face grew solemn, but Pox thought she could sense the laughter underneath.
He said a yeoman of Gird must learn to drink like a man, so I did.
If that's your reason, said Ambrose, you should be a quackthaneer. You don't drink like a man, you drink like a tree. They all laughed. Heavenford brought Pox her platter of sliced meat and gravy. Maul grabbed a slice and stuffed it in his mouth. She looked at him.
It's luck, he said. It's your good luck if someone else eats the first bite.
Pox shook her head and began eating. By the time she was through, the room had almost emptied. Ambrose and Maul had gone out together. Sir Phellis, Pox knew, would be coming in later for her report. She asked Heavenford for another of the apple tarts and settled back comfortably. The black-clad man was still in the room and met her eyes. She had not talked to him since the afternoon before the council's summons. Now he came to her table.
May I sit?
Pox nodded, her mouth full of apple tart. She reached for her mug to wash it down.
I don't mean to pry, he said. You seem in good favor now. I hope, for your sake, that is true. But if anything is going to be done about that attack on the caravan, and if you are going to be part of it, I wish you'd consider my offer to come along. You might well want someone who is not, let's say, from here.
Pox looked at him a moment before answering. Sir Arvid, didn't you say... He nodded, smiling slightly. You seem to be telling me that these people can't be trusted, is that so?
I don't think I'd put it like that. I do think that those who live in small villages are more trustworthy to others of the village than to strangers. Haven't you found that to be true in your travels? That these village folk stick together?
I suppose. Pox took another swallow from her mug and prodded the remains of the tart.
It might be a reason not to trust them fully, but pardon me, why should I trust you?
He gave her a suggestion of a wink.
Ah, I knew you knew more than you showed at first. That mountain traveling is enough to scramble anyone's wits. Now, I don't have anything to say about their character. Everyone knows how honest the Girdsmen are, at least to Girdsmen.
When Pox didn't rise to this, he smiled a little and went on.
But you aren't Girdish, or of this village. I don't think they'd lie, exactly. But they might shade the truth. And if it came to your skin or theirs?
I see your point, said Pox quietly. But you have still to answer mine.
My dear, he began as he drew his dagger and carefully trimmed his fingernails with it. You should trust me only because it is in your interest as well as mine. I am neither Girdish nor a native here. Therefore, I am unlikely to sacrifice you for a brother's reputation or a friend's life. I don't expect you to trust me as you trusted your companions in Duke Phelan's company. Of course not. But I have no good reason to kill you, and several to keep you alive.
And they are? Asked Pox curiously. She picked up the rest of her tart and ate it, waiting for his answer. His eyes narrowed. He resheathed his dagger.
I told you before that our interests might march together.
I think they do. I wish the brigands no luck. I would be glad to see them dead. You need not know why. Obviously, no one official is going to encourage me to go after them. I am not an experienced soldier, and that's what it takes. But if that is the charge they gave you, then I would be glad to assist, perhaps to make sure it is done thoroughly.
Have you a grudge against them?
Asked Pox, honestly curious now. Have they done you or your family an injury?
I will not tell you that at this time.
Arvid turned a little and signaled Heavenford, who came over with a sharp glance for both of them.
Wine, sir, if you please.
Pox shook her head, and the innkeeper moved away.
I perceive, lady, that you are of sufficient experience to have caution, but insufficient to recognize an honest offer.
Nonetheless, it stands. My word, you would have no reason to trust. But I will tell you honestly that I will not kill you, and I will defend you within reason if you accept me as one of your company. If you were wise enough to know what I am, you would know what that is worth.
Pox frowned, not liking the bantering tone or the subtle insults. It reminded her too much of Messenian.
She looked up at him again. If such a command is offered me, and if I accept you, what other suggestions would you have?
His brows arched.
You ask much, with nothing given.
I do? What of you? You ask my trust, with no evidence of your character.
I have had such chances, sir, as make me distrust most strangers.
But guardsmen...
His tone was sour.
Most soldiers have found guardsmen to be honest, at the least, and usually brave as well. I don't know your allegiance, either to gods or lords.
Arvid sighed. I am a guild member in good standing. As such, I obey my guildmaster in Varela. It is an old guild, long established there.
What craft? Asked Pox.
He laughed.
What? Do you think the master money changer here tells everyone when he travels what his guild affiliation is? Don't you know that some guilds bind their traveling members to secrecy? Do you want to bring down on me that very plague of thieves you think I represent?
No. Pox flushed, confused.
I'm sorry, he said quickly. I shouldn't have laughed. I understand your suspicion, and it does you credit. Any experienced adventurer is suspicious. But I cannot tell you my guild, at least not without asking, at this time. I cannot tell anyone here. I can only tell you what I have told you. In my judgment, and I am not without experience in the world myself, it is in both our interests to cooperate. I have an interest in those brigands. I want to see them removed. Does that sound like a thief, or worse? You, I believe, have the council's permission to mount an attack on them, and you could use someone at your back who has no reason to wish an honest witness dead. Suppose they are actually living in town, related to one of the council members. Do you honestly think they'll thank you for capturing such as that? Let you take the risk? Yes. Let you kill and capture them? Yes, perhaps. But let you live to take the credit when it's their own? I doubt that much. If the brigands really are strangers, then you have no problem. But otherwise...
Pox nodded slowly. She was not truly convinced, but she had worried that the spy the council wanted her to find might turn out to be someone they liked. And as well, they had asked her to involve the other adventurers in town if she could. Surely this Arvid Semensen was an adventurer.
From the hill west of the keep, the crooked path down the moat was clearly visible, as were the signs of age and decay. Stones from the outer wall tumbled into the moat, leaving ragged gaps in the wall through which the battered interior could be seen. Pox, concealed behind a thick-leaved but prickly shrub, stared down at the broken walls and waited for the diversion Sir Fellas had promised. She had a motley group. Mal and several other yeomen of Gerd, including Dorian, the two traitors she'd met some days before, who said they wanted to avenge the attack on the caravan, a servant of theirs, whom they said was a good bowman, one of Eris's sons, a Fokian, Mal had reported sadly, but a good man, and Arvid. The sun rose higher, burning off the last of the mist from the moat and swamp around. Pox insisted that her group stay well back in cover, and refused to let them talk or light pipes. A subdued grumble followed these commands.
"Stands to reason," muttered the heavy-set bowman, "that if they could see us, we could see them. We can't see a thing through these leaves. We could smoke, at least."
Pox shook her head fiercely. "Sun's in our eyes. They've got the better light. Think. How far can you see a shepherd's breakfast fire smoke? There could be a dozen eyes looking out of that gap from the shadow, and we'd never know it. Be still."
Someone cursed, but softly, and they rested as best they could in the positions Pox had chosen for them. The sun rose higher. Pox had to force herself to stay still. She wanted to walk back and forth from post to post. Was this why the captains had so often walked the line before battle? She could hardly believe that she, the same old Pox, was commanding a group like this, a group of strangers. She looked again at the keep, which seemed a different shape, as the shadows shifted with the sun, and wondered if the magician who built it had indeed left a curse. A light wind sifted through the trees, shuffling the leaves and making the shadows dance. She wondered if the militia had left Brewersbridge on time. They were supposed to have left just enough time for her to get her group into position. It had been too long. She squinted at the sun, feeling the sweat spring out on her neck, chill as it was. She swallowed against the fear,
and glared around at the others. Someone had shifted carelessly, and a rock clattered. She turned back to the keep. Nothing moved there but a cloud of midges over the moat, a shimmer in the sun. At last, she heard the rhythmic noise of marching men and horses. She eased forward to the edge of the wood, trying to see the north side of the keep, where the forest left a wider opening. The sound came louder, eddying in the uncertain wind. Now she could hear it distinctly. A movement in the distance caught her eye. A horn call swam through the air, mellow and long. She looked back at the keep. There, a flicker, quick as a lizard's tail, on the highest part of the ruin. The horn call came again, louder. She could hear a bellowed command from the oncoming force. She looked back at her group. They were all alert. Maul grinned at her, shifting his broad shoulders. She realized that he had moved forward, coming between her and the others, but she had no time to think of that. The front of the captain's show of force was out of the trees now. She could not tell from this distance how many of them were illusion, nor could she tell which was Xynthus. None of them wore the kind of robes she had seen on him so far.
"There's one,"
said Maul, so softly she almost missed hearing it. Then she, too, saw the brown-clad man peering from a low gap in the keep wall. He passed through, carrying a plank, and laid it on the edge of the moat. It extended to one of the fallen blocks farther out. He moved out onto the plank, and at once another came, this one in a heavy mailed shirt, dragging another plank. The second plank bridged the moat from the stone to the near shore. A third man appeared, carrying bows, and the three slipped across the bridge and spread to cover it. After a glance upslope, they concentrated on the corners of the keep. Noise from the north side increased. Pox could not tell if it was a fight or just noise. Suddenly a gout of flame rose up, and a thunderous boom echoed across the woods. Birds flew up screaming. The bowmen below did not flee, though one of them half stood, to be pulled back by the others. Another gout of flame and another followed. The noise was appalling, even though Xynthus had warned them. A deer broke cover and bounded through the woods, crashing and snorting. A hurrying file of men slipped from the gap and teetered across the bridge. Pox saw the glint of mail on most of them. They had their swords out and bows slung to their backs. She counted as they came, hoping that Sir Felis's estimate was right. She knew the last had come when the bowmen moved. The entire group, just over a score, started up the hill, as she had expected. The archers stayed in the rear, and two swordsmen took the lead, several strides ahead of the rest. Pox frowned. With that spread, some of them could escape if they were quick. She thought they would be quick. She turned to the stocky bowman.
"Shoot low, just in front of them."
"Why?" But he complied. Two arrows thudded into the ground, and the two brigands in front slowed and peered up the slope.
"So they'll bunch up," said Pox, "as they are now."
He gave her a quick look.
"Huh, that's quite a trick. Where'd you learn?"
But they were all together now, and Pox called for another volley from this man and the Girdish archers as well. Four of the brigands fell. Pox saw one of them struggle up and begin to crawl away along the slope. The others, furious and frightened, charged up the slope. The bowmen shot as fast as they could, hitting seven more of the brigands before Pox led the rest of her group to break the charge. Some of those fell. Others turned aside, limping, or jerked the arrows free and kept with the main group. She hardly noticed. In the lead, full of the old excitement, she met the first brigand with a sweeping blow that broke his sword at the hilt. He jerked out his dagger and thrust, but she was past him, the sword carving into another man's side. A blade she didn't see caught her in the ribs. She felt the blow, but rolled off it to take another brigand in the neck. She heard the yeomen of Gird call on their patron as they followed her, but compared to the battles she'd been in with the Duke's company, this was short and easy. Almost before she knew it, the clash of weapons ceased. She looked around. Arvid Semonsen was wiping the blade of his narrow sword. It was stained to the hilt. One of the merchants nursed a wounded arm. His bowmen stood guard over him, dagger drawn. Maul had one brigand down, and was tying his arms. Two of the other yeomen were guarding the few who could stand. 10 of the brigands were down, dead or dying of serious wounds. In the distance, Pox thought she saw 2 or 3 huddled forms limping away. None of her own force seemed badly hurt, barring the merchant. Pox walked over to look. He had a long, deep gash on the arm, not a killing wound, though he seemed dazed. She hadn't expected much from him anyway.
"What now, Pox?" asked Maul. "Do we kill them, or take them back, or what?"
Pox glared at him,
before she remembered the agreement. For an instant, she had thought he might seriously mean to kill the prisoners. In that moment, the other merchant spoke.
We ought to kill them.
No. Pox shook her head for emphasis. We'll take them to Sir Felus. He's the Count's representative.
But they killed...
We've killed enough. How many do you want? Pox turned away and squatted beside Maul's prisoner. She recognized the man who had led the others up the hill. He was bleeding from a cut on his head that had split the leather helm, and from a deep gash in one leg. Better bandage that, she said to Maul, who nodded. She wiped the blood off her own sword and sheathed it. The prisoner watched her, dark eyes alert. He flinched when Maul touched his leg, then held still as it was bandaged. Pox said nothing, looking around at the others as she caught her breath. Then she met the prisoner's eyes. Your name? She asked.
Why should I tell you? We're just going to be killed.
Probably, said Pox. Any reason why not?
Reasons.
His mouth worked and he spat blood.
Being poor's reason enough. That and going looking for work. That'll get you killed, that will, going along, trying to find a place and nothing, nothing.
He twisted his neck, wincing to look around. Pox felt an obscure sympathy she had not expected with this weather-worn robber. He did not look as if he'd enjoyed his life. For that matter, he didn't look as if he'd profited by it. How many of you were there?
They're the lucky ones, he said sourly. Dead and over with. Gods above, what chance did we have?
Chance?
Rumbled Maul, coming back to confront him. About the chance you gave Eris at her farm, I suppose? Poor, eh? You think we're all rich? The prisoner closed his eyes briefly.
I don't. Damn it, man. I never thought to be a robber, not back when I had land once, myself, a few cattle enough, if I hadn't come here.
What about here? Asked Arvid, who had come up softly behind Pox. What's so special here? The man seemed to choke, shook his head and said no more. Pox pushed herself up. All of her group could travel as they were. Of the brigands, four that might live could not walk. Those whose wounds were mortal, she dispatched herself, not trusting the others to give a clean death stroke. But she told the others to gather the weaponry, such as it was. She had always hated stripping bodies, and had avoided it most of the time. She had the yeomen supervise the prisoners in making litters for those who could not walk.
Pox, what about those that got away?
Maul swung his bloody axe slowly in his hand. We'll have to track them. They're all wounded. Pox sighed. I don't know how many.
I thought four or five. There's a couple down there still.
He jerked his head toward the slope.
I'd better go.
No, you stay here. I'll take Dorian. You don't need him here. Pox started to protest, but thought better of it. She was sure Maul was trustworthy. He had just started down the hill when five horsemen broke from the woods on the south side of the keep. Pox saw a flurry of motion in the bushes near them, and then four of the horsemen charged, driving out the remnant of the robbers. That was over in a few seconds. Xynthis rode across the slope to greet her.
Well done, Lady Poxenarian, he said cheerfully. Sir Felus will be pleased.
You too. That was a real show, that... Pox stopped short, wondering if she should reveal his work as illusion. Xynthis grinned at her confusion and spoke up.
Most people find a fire blast alarming, he said casually. I sent the rest of the troops back when we found the main keep empty. You seemed to have everything well in hand back here.
Pox wondered what he would have said if she'd blurted out the truth, but merely smiled. I'm glad you thought to send a few around back for the stragglers.
Oh, of course. I see you have quite a few prisoners. How about transport?
If you could have someone send a cart or wagon out from town, and Master Travenan is wounded, it would be better for him to ride.
Certainly. Why don't I see to moving your mounts back along the road? Then you can come out the way we came in. It's easier traveling.
Fine. Pox looked around. The prisoners had rough litters ready, covered with their cloaks. They loaded the wounded and prepared to march out. Xynthis rode off with a wave of his hand. The soldiers from Sir Felus's command joined her, flanking the party. One of them offered his horse. No, thank you, said Pox. I'll walk to the road. He shrugged and moved back into position. She wondered if she should have taken his offer.
I wonder,
said Arvid quietly at her side. "That you are unhurt. Didn't you know that a sword broke on your armor?" Pox thought back to the fight. It hardly deserved the name of battle. Oh, I remember a blow in the side. Yes, I was just behind you then. It was a fair blow, and the man was as heavy as you or more. I thought you'd get a broken rib out of it at the least. Pox took a deep breath, feeling nothing. No, she said. It must have caught at an angle. Arvid shook his head. I saw it. Either you're a good bit tougher than I thought, which is unlikely, or your armor has great virtue. Where did you get it? Pox gave him a straight look. I found it, she said, in a ruin. That's a good sword, too. Yes. Pox looked around. Everything seemed to be secure. Mal was moving up beside her. He had wiped the axe blade on something. It was clean. The others are dead, he said. Too bad hurt to make it. The riders trampled some of them. I did it quick. He looked past Pox at Arvid. You fight good for a city man. Arvid laughed easily. Do you think all soldiers begin in a farmyard? Mal's forehead creased. Nay, not that, sir, but the ones I know all did, and the city men I know are mostly merchants. This lady now says she comes from a farm. Isn't that so? Pox nodded. Many good things come from cities, said Arvid. Oh, I didn't mean any different, I know that. Fine clothes and jewels and that. But there's more thieves in cities, too. My brother always said that wealth draws thieves like honey draws bees. I suppose. Arvid didn't sound interested. He turned to Pox. What are you going to do now? Pox shrugged. First things first. Get the prisoners to Sir Felis. Then he can find out how they've been operating, and if they've had contacts in town. Chapter 15 Sir Felis met the party coming into town. Ambrose was with him, as were several other yeomen. Some of the townspeople cheered. Pox felt her face redden. She was glad she had the black horse. At least, she didn't have to look up at Sir Felis. You've done well, he said, after a quick look at the group. None of your men killed or even badly hurt.
My arm, began the merchant.
Sir Felis gave Pox a quick look of amusement, soldier to soldier, before speaking to the man. I'm sorry, sir, I didn't see. The surgeon has been alerted. He's at the inn.
Good. It was a terrible fight.
Pox saw one of Sir Felis's men roll his eyes. She choked down a laugh. Her knees felt shaky. In the stir around them, the black horse began to fidget. She met Ambrose's gaze. How was it? He asked. Went well. She worked the black horse over to the side of the road near him. They all came out of the bolt hole just as we thought. Your yeomen are good fighters. Steady. Ambrose smiled. I know. The marshals trained them well. I'm glad they were willing to go with you.
What now?
Well, Sir Felis will take them to the keep. I suppose he'll ask you along. The council's heard. Of course, they're happy about it. Do you think you got them all?
21 came out. We left 11 dead and have 10 prisoners. Unless some stayed in the keep, and I wouldn't have with what Xynthis did.
Mindful of spies, Pox did not elaborate on that. They don't look so bad, said Ambrose thoughtfully.
Who, the brigands?
Yes, I thought...
Pox glanced at him. They'd all look like orcs?
He flushed. I know I don't have your experience.
Don't be silly, I didn't mean that.
Pox found herself annoyed with his sensitivity. I was surprised myself, if you want to know. The only brigands I'd seen in Arrhenius looked as vicious as they were. These men look like any poor farmer or soldier. The leader, that one in the litter there, he said something about not wanting to be a robber.
Eh, once he's caught, what'd you expect him to say?
The uninjured merchant had pressed close to Pox's side. He's not likely to admit he's been a thief from birth.
He hasn't been, said Arvid, with a certainty that made Pox wonder.
How do you know?
Lady, I, like Master Xynthis, prefer not to reveal all the sources of my knowledge. But I will tell you that had he been a thief from birth, he would not have been in that keep.
But how do you know? Both Pox and Ambrose stared at Arvid. He smiled, bowed, and passed on toward the inn.
That one, muttered the merchant.
idly putting his hand on the black horse's neck. It jerked aside. By the time Pox had it calm again, the merchant and most of the group had passed. Sir Felis beckoned. Pox moved the black horse beside his, at the tail of the procession.
"Come on out with me to the keep, will you?" he asked. "I'd like to hear what happened. My cook should have something ready, too."
Pox nodded. She realized that Sir Felis might want her to be present when he questioned the prisoners. She wondered what the customs were.
"And you too, Yeoman Marshal, if your duties permit," said Sir Felis smoothly. "Since the Marshal is not here, I would like a representative from the Grange to be present."
"The Grange's honor, Sir Felis," said Ambrose. "May I ask how long this might take? It is customary for the Yeoman of Gird to give thanks in the Grange for the success of such a mission. I would like to tell them when—"
Sir Felis pursed his lips.
"I am not certain, Yeoman Marshal, but surely by dark. These men do not look so desperate as I thought."
Pox had feared that Sir Felis might, like Olured the Black of Arrennes, torture his prisoners. He did not need to. By the time Sir Felis, trailed by Pox and Ambrose, came down the stairs to question them, the brigand leader had decided to tell what he knew.
"We was all honest men once, sir," he said weakly. "I was a farmer myself. Some of the others was trade or craft, but most was farmers. But that bad drought 3 years ago in Verakai lands, that's what drove me out. The taxes, and then no grass, and the cows dying. So my lord Verakai put me out, and I went wandering. No one had honest work, sir, and that's the truth of it."
He closed his eyes a moment. Pox looked around at the other brigands. The wounded lay quietly. The rest squatted against the dungeon wall, heads down.
"I suppose Elam and I were the first,"
the man went on, after a long pause.
"He and I'd known each other back home. We traveled together. We come on this place in a storm. Went in to get dry, and then seems we couldn't leave."
"What stopped you?" asked Ambrose.
"I don't know. Something. It called, like. We stayed there a couple of days, shot a bird for food. Elam was a good bowman. I stuck one of those things in the moat, but we couldn't eat that."
"What thing?" asked Sir Felis.
"You know, one of them big things, like a frog, only near man-sized. Smell rotten. They have teeth, too. Anyway, we stayed there, took a goose from a farm nearby. I'd asked for work, and they drove us off. Called us robbers, they did. And we hadn't robbed before that, made me mad."
He stopped again and rubbed his nose.
"Elam wanted to go on somewheres else. But when we got an hour or so away, we both got the cramps bad. Had to come back. Then the others came."
He nodded toward the other men.
"One or two at a time, every week or so. Soon we'd hunted out all the woods around. If we took from the farms, well, most of us had farmed. We didn't want to." "So then he said, 'Take caravans,'"
put in one of the others, leaning back against the wall and tilting his head up to look at Sir Felis.
"He says, 'What's a caravan to you? Them merchants are all rich, and what has rich done for you? That's what he says, steal from caravans and get rich yourself.'"
The man spat.
"Rich? Heh! All we ever see's enough to eat. And that not all the time. A few coppers now and then, a new cloak, that's all." "You shouldn't talk about him," said the first robber, pushing himself up. "It's bad luck.
He can't do much here," said the other. "Tarry him, think. It's listening to him, has got us here, in jail. When we were born honest men, robbers we are, and it's him as profits by it."
"But you know what he said. He can reach us anywheres. That's why we couldn't leave. He could touch us here, right now, and—"
"And what? Kill us deader than they will, when they're through talking."
The man gave Sir Felis a bitter grin.
"Tell you the truth, sir, if you can kill that devil, you'll do yourself more good than killing us, and I'll be glad of it."
Pox saw that some of the other brigands seemed very frightened. But they said nothing. The leader had fallen back, and now lay silent, with eyes closed and jaw clenched.
"Who is this man that ordered you to rob?"
asked Sir Felis.
Was he captured or killed?
Not him, said the spokesman angrily. Not him. He's got his own place, safe and deep, and all we know's his orders. I don't know his name, sir, or who or what he is, and I'm not sure he's a man, even. Terium knows, I think.
He glanced at the leader.
I don't.
It came out as a harsh whisper.
I swear I don't. I never seen him but the one time, and after that I couldn't.
He gripped his head, rocking back and forth.
He had black robes, that's all, and some kind of thing on a chain. It, like a hand spread out, only it had too many fingers.
Pox felt, rather than saw, Ambrose stiffen beside her.
Gerd's arm,
he said softly, then more loudly. Like a spider, maybe? The man's head turned towards him.
It might be, if... No!
He began to flail about on the straw.
No, don't let him, not here!
Sir Felis swore, a soldier's curse Pox had heard many times. She could see nothing but the frightened man, waving his hands at nothing and trying to flee something no one could see. Ambrose moved forward before the others shook off their surprise and caught his arm. Be still, man. Terium's your name, be still. Gerd will ward you from that evil.
No one can. He said he could.
Gerd's grace on you, Terium. Gerd's strong arm will ward you. Give him a chance.
You're a marshal of Gerd.
I'm the yeoman marshal of this grange, said Ambrose. I am sworn to Gerd's service and known to him. I give you my word that I place your name before Gerd.
Please.
The man's eyes were open now, and fastened on Ambrose.
Please, sir. I'm not afraid to die. Just not that filth. Please, sir.
Ambrose freed one hand and held out his medallion. Terium touched it with the tips of his fingers. You have been spelled by some evil. Is that not so? Asked Ambrose. You fear that it will take your soul? Terium nodded.
He said he could do that. Wherever we tried to run, whatever we did, he would find us and see us in...
He stopped and lowered his voice. Pox could not hear what he said to Ambrose, but she saw the sudden twitch of Ambrose's shoulders.
Well... And do you believe that the High Lord and Gerd are stronger than that one? I know I should, sir. But I'm feared. I'm feared they won't be for me.
Ambrose looked around at the other robbers. And you? What do you think of the power of that evil one when you are here? Do you think the High Lord is weaker? Some shook their heads. Some simply stared. The man who had spoken so boldly before pushed himself to his feet.
Sir, Yeoman Marshal, I was a yeoman of Gerd once, not a good one, you'll say, and I won't argue that. I never thought to find myself bound by such evil. Just a drover like me. I don't know what that black cape can do, but I will say the High Lord is right if he kills me for it.
Ambrose gave him a bleak smile. Yeoman of Gerd, you must face the Count's judgment, but the High Lord knows his own servants. The man's face lighted.
I swear, Yeoman Marshal, that it was not fear of the Count's court that kept me there, whatever the Grange court demands.
Gerd will have somewhat to say in that, Yeoman.
Aye, Yeoman Marshal.
He turned to Sir Felis.
Sir, if you will, if the court demands my life, permit the Grange to report the death of a yeoman.
Sir Felis looked at Ambrose, brows raised. Ambrose nodded.
The Marshal would say the same, Sir Felis. A yeoman may be spelled into evil deeds. I judge it was so with him, and perhaps with some others. The punishment must fall, but their names remain on the Grange rolls. Only those who willingly serve evil and refuse to repent are cast out. He won't tell you, said Terium softly. But I will. He tried to get away more than once. We kept him until the curse softened him.
I pray the High Lord's mercy on you, Terium, for your deeds. And your confessions. Back upstairs, in Sir Felis's conference room, Ambrose reddened under their gaze. Xynthis studiously ignored the others, setting wine to heat on the hearth. Sir Felis simply watched Ambrose, his weathered face fixed in a neutral expression. Pox tried to see, behind that youth and inexperience, the power he had seemed to have with the prisoners.
"Well," said Sir Felis suddenly, as if he'd made a decision. He looked at Pox. "I say again, Poxenarian, that you did very well indeed. I am not now surprised that your duke recommended you for advanced training. I do not think many novice commanders could have taken over a score with a dozen and had no casualties."
"I could not, without Master Zinthis's help," said Pox. "And your soldiers caught the stragglers."
"Even so," said Sir Felis. He looked her up and down. "And you, yourself, have no injury? I see your tunic is slashed."
"No, sir," said Pox. "I wear mail, of course."
"Humph. Yes, well then, I think we'd better have a formal report to the council. You know the sort of thing. I'll speak to the mayor, and I expect we'll meet tonight. You'll be summoned. Yeoman Marshal?"
Sir Felis turned to Ambrose.
"Yes, Sir Felis?" "Since some of the prisoners claim to be yeomen, I will delay trial until the Marshal returns."
"Thank you, Sir Felis."
"I will not promise that it will make any difference."
"Of course not, Sir Felis. The Grange understands that."
"Good. I'll see you later, then. Will you be at council in the Marshal's place?"
"Yes, Sir Felis."
"Good. Poxenarian, do you wish to make your own reckoning of the arms recovered?"
"No, sir."
Pox saw no reason to distrust Sir Felis's count. "Then I'll see you later, if you'll excuse me." He shrugged into his heavy cloak.
"Certainly, sir."
Pox and Ambrose followed Sir Felis down the winding stairs and out to a sunny afternoon. A soldier brought their horses forward. Sir Felis had already mounted and ridden off. They were almost back to the Jolly Potboy when Ambrose turned to Pox.
"Can I have a talk with you?"
"Me?" Pox had been thinking about the report she would have to give to the council. She dreaded it.
"Of course, but what about?"
"Come on to the Grange. I don't want to talk about it here."
Pox sighed. She had been up since long before dawn, and she had looked forward to a hot bath. She had not had time for more than a brief hand wash before the simple lunch Sir Felis had served. But Ambrose looked so concerned that she nodded finally and turned the black horse away from the inn.